ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We'll read the next verse. And so, 1 chapter 4, 19, okay.
Chaturhotam karma shudham
Prajanam diksha
vaidikam Yadadhat yagya santatyai
Vedam
ekam chaturvidham
Chaturhotram
karma shudham
Prajanam diksha
vaidikam Yadadhat yagya santatyai
Vedam
ekam chaturvidham Chatuhu,
four.
Hotam,
sacrificial fires.
Karma shuddham,
purification of work.
Prajana,
of the people in general.
Diksha,
after seeing.
Vaidikam,
according to Vedic rites.
Yadadhat,
made into.
Yajna,
sacrifice.
Santatyai,
to expand.
Vedam ekam,
only one Veda.
Chatur vidham,
in four divisions.
Translation, he saw that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas were means by which the people's occupations could be purified.
And to simplify the process, he divided the one Veda into four in order to expand them among men. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Formerly there was only the Veda of the name Yajur. And the four divisions of sacrifices were there specifically mentioned. But to make them more easily performable, the Veda was divided into four divisions of sacrifice just to purify the occupational service of the four orders. Above the four Vedas, namely Rig Yajur Sama and Atharva, there are the Puranas, the Mahabharata, Samhitas, etc., which are known as the fifth Veda. Sri Vyasadeva and his many disciples were all historical personalities, and they were very kind and sympathetic toward the fallen souls of this age. As such, the Puranas and Mahabharata were made from related historical facts which explained the teachings of the four Vedas. There is no point in doubting the authority of the Puranas and Mahabharata as parts and parcels of the Vedas. In the Chandogya Upanishad 714, the Puranas and Mahabharata, generally known as histories, are mentioned as the fifth Veda. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, that is the way of ascertaining the respective values of the revealed scriptures. And the next verse says the same thing. This text 20. The four divisions of the original sources of knowledge, the Vedas, were made separately, but the historical facts and authentic stories mentioned in the Puranas are called the fifth Veda. And, well, yeah. The next section is details. This Veda was assigned to this person, that Veda was assigned to that person, and so forth. And then the Puranas. So we'll cover that, I guess, tomorrow. Continuing from yesterday, Vyasadeva, a living entity that's empowered by the fullness of the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just even that message itself is something that's a big wow. Like this tiny jiva carrying the fullness of the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the feature of his jnana shakti, specifically empowered to write literature according to our acharyas, particularly Rupa Goswami. This category of, anyway, in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, it's also mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are seven different categories of Shaktivesha avatars. Vyasadeva is a Shaktivesha avatar. And there's seven different categories, and he fits into one of those categories. In any case, he has the fullness of the Lord's knowledge potency. That's one of his six opulences, so that's pretty big. And in addition, the previous verses mentioned, he was filled with compassion. He was not self-interested. He was literally in that platform of selfless service unto others, specifically in his case, jnana shakti, or giving literary works for others. And he had the capacity to see into the future. Some people have different capacities, and that was one of his capacities. So seeing what he saw into the coming conditions of Kali Yuga, he wanted to do something. He wanted to do some service. So now here's the service. He took the one Veda, divided into four, and then this verse is the fifth Veda. He did all of that work. Specifically in the verses that is mentioned, that within the four Vedas, or you could say within the Veda, within the Yajur Veda, there are sacrifices. And at least from the perspective of the transcendental Lord who provided those sacrifices, they're meant for karma shuddham, purification of work. Unfortunately, most people look at the purification of work as something else. An opportunity to get what I want. In an authorized way. Clean, goodness, but above all, joy. So authorized, elevated, religious, lauded, enjoyment. And that's the purpose of the Vedas. Krishna says this in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Most people think that the purpose of Vedas is that, and there's nothing more. Vyasadeva knew there's something more. This particular verse, like why he did what he did when he saw what he saw, aside from, being a literary personality, so he did a literary something. He saw that the purpose of the Vedas was for sanctifying work. Karma shuddham. Shuddham means pure. Making the work purified. Purified from what? Purified from the tendency of those who are in this material world is enjoying independently. So enjoy dependently. said it independently. But it's an improvement in the contaminated condition of the soul to enjoy dependently. Of course, there's a higher purpose to let go of the spirit of independent enjoyment altogether, even like dependent on the devas, the dispensers of the wishes that one has. Just let go of those wishes that one has in favor of the wishes of the Supreme, who will take care of all your needs, no problem. No problem. Just like a parent looks after the needs of their child, no problem. Of course, parents can't digest the food for their children or make themselves grow and divide, and that's, there's higher authorities that are looking after all those things. And ultimately, you know, the destination of the soul, the fruits of karma. But in any case, as parents look after their dependent child, the child doesn't have to say, let me please provide me breakfast. Or something. My shoe has a hole in it. Can I have another pair of shoes? Or whatever it is. So parents wish to, it's their affection. It's just natural. So Krishna is superlatively affectionate, and they'll supply. So there is no necessity of this kind of Vedic rituals. Chaturhotram karma shutam. There's no need for it. If the consciousness of the living entity is taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, his last instruction. Savadharmam paritnyaja. Abandon all these things that are within the Vedas. They come from him. Abandon them all. Or subordinate them to this higher principle. What's that higher principle? Mam ekam sharanam. So, that message is within the Vedas. It's not missing from the Vedas. It's just that the preponderance of information within the four Vedas is how to become a pious enjoyer. And the brahmanas that need to assist you in that, because the brahmanas know the mantras and they know the tantras, the procedures, and they know how to do the yajñas, these chatur hotram karma shuddham. They knew all those things. So the other orders of society become dependent upon qualified brahmanas. But when working cooperatively, then all the necessities of mankind are provided, and in turn then all the necessities of the lower species of life are also provided. It's a comprehensive holistic system. So Vyas compiled them. And in fact, specifically, the one Yajurveda was, for convenience sake, divided into four. Because for different types of yajna. So rather than analyzing what each of those four are, because that knowledge is available, I thought I'd spend more time just appreciating, maybe expanding a little bit too, appreciating how Prabhupada has presented in the short paragraph something that Jiva Goswami has presented in a whole book called Tattva Sandarbha. Jiva Goswami is mentioned in the purport. He was an author of three different commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam. He did one, like Prabhupada did, you know, verse by verse by verse through the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami has such a commentary. But he's a prolific scholar, and so he did a second commentary just on the 10th canto, and then he did a third commentary that's topic by topic, or subject matter by subject matter. So not, you know, just first canto, second canto, but all over all the cantos, taking, extracting the messages of the Bhagavatam and organizing a commentary based on the messages and then references from the Bhagavatam and other places that speak about the message of the Bhagavatam. And one of those, there's six parts to that. Sandarbhas, they're called. Sandarbhas is a technical term of a particular type of commentary, and in a very simple language, it's this topic-by-topic type. There's more to it, but that's the basic idea. And one of those six is discussed in this short paragraph, purport, which is exactly part of the first book. Pramana Kanda section of Tattva Sandarbha. By the way, the Tattva Sandarbha is now a BBT publication. Gopi Pranadana and the Sanskrit department in Govardhan, Vrindavan, worked diligently on Tattva Sandarbha and is now available, published by the BBT. And in just a little appreciation, because it's very nice, very systematic. Jiva Goswami begins Tattva Sandarbha glorifying Lord Chaitanya, because that's his, the Lord of his heart, his Ishtadeva. And Lord Chaitanya taught love for Krishna. So then a number of verses about Krishna. How wonderful is Krishna. And then he says, paraphrasing to keep it simple, I want to talk about Krishna. I want to write about Krishna. And then he stops and says, before you write about Krishna or any subject matter, it is prudent to ask the question, what is the means of knowing that's something which you want to speak about or glorify? And then there's a break. Then there's this Pramana Kanda section that says, well, what's the means of knowing anything? If you want to know Krishna or anything. Like what's out there, or what's up there, or what's, you know, what's what? How do you know what's what? You need the means of knowing something. So the Sanskrit word is pramana. The English word is really fancy. It's epistemology. Woo. Means of knowing something. How do you know something? So there's evidence. Another, the means of knowing something has to do with evidence about that something. Without elaborating, he goes through, there's classically within the Vedas, there's three primary means. He expands it, because he's Jiva Goswami, into 10, which is just another system of the same three, just expanding, detailing some of them. But so, direct sense perception, through logic and reason, and descending knowledge. Those are three primary means of knowing something. And he discusses why the direct perception is fallible, the reasoning process is fallible. So the best amongst the three is descending knowledge as a means of knowing something. And then he establishes that the Vedas are exactly that. And amongst the Vedas, what's the best part of the Vedas for knowing something? And then he discusses what we're discussing here, which is Vyasadeva took the one Veda, divided to four, and then the fifth Veda. And he says that some people, this is not only modern scholarship, but even during Jiva Goswami's time, which to speak of, you know, Kali Yuga has progressed, and modern scholarship has gotten more confused and contaminated. But in any case, Some scholars say the four Vedas are Vedas and the others are not Vedas. They say that. They're corollary literatures that explain the Vedas, but the Vedas are the Vedas, and then there's Shruti and there's Smriti. There's the four Vedas, and then that which explains the four Vedas. So that which explains is like poo-poo. That's their scholarship. So he addresses that poo-poo thing and says, very interesting, that within the four Vedas, it says, that one's as Vedic as we are. There's one of them is references here, Chandogya Upanishad. You can look up the reference, it's right in Tattvasandarbha, where it describes that the Vedas have these four divisions and there's the fifth division. I don't need to give it just some appreciation. It's not a Tattvasandarbha class, but it's a wonderful literature and the references are very strong. And he uses keen logic, where he says that even this idea that supplementary literature, because sometimes the smritis are given that kind of qualification or characterized that way, the supplementary literature. He gives the example of a golden ring or a golden ornament. Supposing you have a golden ornament and you want to repair or augment the golden ornament, do you put brass or iron or some other metal, or do you use gold? If you do it properly, it's gold. And so the gold that's augmenting or complementing or supplementing the golden ornament, it's gold as much as the ornament is gold. And then he gives scriptural reference that says that, from the Shrutis. So his position, as Prabhupada is very simply presenting it here, here's what Prabhupada says. There's no point in doubting the authority of the Puranas and Mahabharata as parts and parcels of the Vedas. So he says, confirmed by Jiva Goswami on scriptural authority, that the history portion, so there's two kinds of history, at least the nomenclature, Puranas and Itihasas. And it's just technical distinctions between the two. Like, for example, this Srimad Bhagavatam is a Purana, Bhagavat Purana, or Padma Purana, or Varaha Purana, or Vishnu Purana. There's certain technical features of what makes a Purana a Purana. And then there's the Itihasas. And Ramayana is an Itihasa. It's history, but the technical manifestation of it is different than a Purana. But they're both under the categories of histories or smriti that are illuminating the Shrutis, as Prabhupada has very simply expressed it here. There, I'll read it. The Puranas and Mahabharata were made from related historical facts which explained the teaching of the four Vedas. So the four Vedas have these, put it this way, abstract concepts. Something that to me that makes a lot of sense is, supposing you read something from the Purusha Sukta prayers from the Rig Veda. They're very popular. And the Purusha Sukta prayers from the Rig Veda describe the process of creation. Those Purusha Sukta prayers are the very same prayers that Lord Brahma and the demigods offered to Lord Vishnu when they were appealing for him to appear in this world. They're very common prayers. Sahasra Shirsha Purusha, Sahasraksha, Sahasrapat, that's how it begins. And it's describing the Purusha's feature of creation. And in the feature of creation, there's the divisions of society, Varna and Ashram. Right in the Purusha Sukta prayers, which is also said in Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Varnamaya Shrishtam Gunakarma Vibhagashit. Krishna creates that system. Same as what the Purusha Sutra prayers say. So, within the Purusha Sutra prayers, it describes Varna and Ashram. Okay, so, what is a Brahmana? What is a Grihastha? Just take that one. There's some Grihasthas here. So, you can read about it in a text, the abstract concept of what a Grihastha is. But then if you have a living example of a Grihastha, you can go, oh, that's what it is. Now I understand the abstract by practical example. Yes? So it's very helpful, more than helpful. It's like practically essential that in this world we have exemplary householders, along with requesting people to read what the books say. We have householders that live what the books say. So you know, oh, that's what it looks like. And then when you have a variety of householders and they have different features, because there's variety in this world, oh, now I understand it's not just that or just that. It's, you get the essence. Prabhupada uses this example pointing to a flower vase. I like this example. Here's a flower vase. And over in the flower vase, there are many different types of flowers. Different species of flowers, different colors of flowers, different fragrances of flowers. And even within a species, some are different. But by seeing all those differences, it gives you the essence of what a flower is. Beautiful example. So now over here, we have scriptures that tell us about grihasthas, and we have exemplary grihasthas, and they're different. No problem. It's perfectly natural that there's differences. But what's the essences? The essences are taught over here, and then they're lived over here. So we can understand the unity within diversity through the lens of what the scripture says. And we should evaluate both the unity and where does diversity become, you know, falls off the cliff. It's no longer diversity, it's corruption. Or something that's not part of what the principle of unity teaches. It's a deviation. Like the question last night about speculation. So we need to know what the scripture says, and we need examples of what it is. So the Puranas are there to give examples of what the teaching is. So we can go, oh, that's what it means. Like, say, honesty. You know, Yudhisthira, the emblem of Dharma. And this little example of what's the standard of honesty when he was told by Krishna to say Ashwatthama is dead, it's dishonest, I can't do it. Just a detail, but Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes about, he did a little commentary on Mahabharata, not verse by verse or section by section, but certain commonly appreciated and spoken about and even misunderstood sections. So he speaks about this one. He writes that some people consider Yudhisthira, because he spoke a lie, Ashwatthama is dead, his chariot, which was previously rising above the ground, touched the ground. He lost that sparkle. Or that special, you know, appreciation by his being dharmic because he did an undharma thing. He spoke Ashwatthama is dead. And Bhaktisiddhanta writes, that's a misunderstanding. It's a popular misunderstanding. Because the proper understanding is, according to Mahabharata, same text, where the standard of what is dharma is given by the personality of Godhead, dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam, that's the Bhagavatam, speaks like that. Dharma is given by God, not by man. And the standard of what is Dharma, God gives. And if so, God says something, that's Dharma. Period. It's not subject to, I don't think it's Dharma, because my sensibilities are different. It's got to be Yudhisthira saying Ashwatthama is dead is our Dharma. It's not truthful. But Bhaktisiddhanta's writing is, the pastime is to teach us that whatever the personality of Godhead says, that is Dharma. And the fact that Yudhisthira hesitated to do what Krishna said, that was our Dharma. It's similar to the, I hope you appreciate this, it's similar to the discussion in Bhagavad Gita, where in the beginning, chapter 1, Arjuna is giving multiple reasons why, if I engage in this battle, it's adharma. I don't want to do adharma. I won't engage in the battle. It's like, he's filled with virtue and compassion and, all good things. And Krishna smashes him and says it's just the opposite. You have a duty, and if you fail to perform your duty, that's adharma. And if you do your duty, that's dharma. So what's important is, what's duty? Well, the Supreme Lord determines what's duty. So there's standard, and then there's exceptional. What Yudhisthira was asked to say by Krishna was exceptional. He can't just go around saying whatever we like and say, God told me to say it. I know somebody that has an idea like that. There's a few pins missing upstairs, but he thinks like that, genuinely. If Krishna says, that's Dharma. Including this, Sarva Dharmam Pritya Jamame Kam Sharanam Raja. That's Dharma. That's Paradharma. That supersedes all other Dharmas. Anyway, it's a nice subject matter. Within the fifth Veda, that's what this morning's verse and the following one, text 20, says, this fifth Veda, the corollary portion, they're not only as Vedic as the four Vedas. Jiva Goswami goes on to say, they're even better. Really? How are they better? The modern scholars aren't going to like that message, but he doesn't hesitate to say it. He gives some common sense messages, and he gives some other reasons. I'll just quickly say a few of them, not all of them. One of them is, if you say something very technical, maybe people that have technical capacity can understand it, maybe they won't. So, but if you want to explain something technical, you may explain it very simply. Oh, that's what it means. It clarifies. It doesn't mean all those other 99 different things. It means this. So then you say the technical, and it means this. That clarifies what it means. So if you're the author of something technical, you may made it and you submit something for a technical journal, then you explain it in a popular fashion for general consumption. It doesn't mean for general consumption it's less accurate. You're the author of both. You're not going to contradict yourself, technical and popular. It just makes it accessible. And then, so his argument is, in this age of Kali, the qualification of people to understand anything is diminished, exactly what we were discussing yesterday. And so, simple explanation is needed. So it checks the tendency to speculate, and just like imagine this and imagine that and so many other things than what it really is intended to mean. So it's better. Then he gives another reason. original Vedas, the percentage of them, there's a little commentary of Tathasandarbha that gives some percentages of exactly what's available today in the Vedas, but it's something like, of course, different parts of the Vedas, but ranging from 8% to 14% of the original four Vedas are remaining. The other ones are gone. And there's some history of how that happened. But imagine if you're supposed to understand Bhagavad Gita and you have 8 to 14% of the verses of Bhagavad Gita. And supposing it's like chapter 1. You're supposed to understand Bhagavad Gita. Good luck. So the four Vedas are availability-wise incomplete. The Shruti, the Smriti portion, are available nearly in full. So this is better. And then another is the language. There's alaukika and laukika. There's worldly and otherworldly Sanskrit, two different types of Sanskrit. It's one of the reasons that scholars say the four Vedas are real and the other ones are compiled by somebody else because, look, there's a different standard of Sanskrit. There's alaukika and laukika. Just, you know, these guys were just modern guys. And they want to claim that they're Vedic. But that's not it at all. Vyasadeva has capacity for both. And he compiled the Vedas in this type and the Puranas and Itihasas in that type of Sanskrit. And because the rules are less strict and severe in the Laukika Sanskrit, it's better. Specifically for this age. It's more accessible. Because people that can learn all these different rules, and how many people are going to be able to do that? And have a proper teacher to teach them to do that? So, and there's other reasons he gives. That actually, not only there's the fifth Veda, but this is better. Which is exactly what Prabhupada says. I mean, I'll just read it again, but read it carefully. And Prabhupada says what I just said in one sentence. Third sentence of the purport. Above the four Vedas, namely Rig Yajur Sama and Atharva, there are the Puranas, Mahabharata and Samhitas, etc., which are known as the fifth Veda. All of that blah, blah, blah that I just explained, Prabhupada says in one sentence. Above the four Vedas, there's the fifth Veda. It's not like, you know, it's kind of off to the side and inconsequential and poo-poo it. Minimize it. It's better. Coming attractions in the upcoming verses and actually upcoming chapters. This is chapter 4. So chapters 5 and 6 and the beginning of chapter 7 is saying that amongst the Puranas and Itihasas, what's the best? And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the best. And there's reasons why, described in Tathasandarbha, but also right here in the Bhagavatam, why it's best amongst the Puranas and the Itihasas, the fifth Veda. And that's for another class. But you can, when you read Tathasandarbha, it makes it very clear. And you read the middle portions of chapter 5, it also makes it very clear. So just succinctly, in this morning's verse, Vyasadeva, being the literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord, he understood that these chaturhotram, the four types of sacrificial performances, were meant for purification of work, karma shuddham. And so he wanted to give that in an accessible manner. So he did that. He gave the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, the procedures for performing rituals, abundantly. But he felt, at the end, dissatisfied. In fact, despondent, more than dissatisfied. And that comes at the end of this chapter, chapter 4. At the beginning of chapter 5, Narada pays him a visit, right there in Bhadrikashram, and explains to him why, because you gave too much emphasis on these things that people in general will take in the wrong way. It's not for purification of work, they'll take it as for achieving worldly things. That's how people take it. A pious way, a virtuous way, a laudable way of achieving worldly things. That's called Hinduism. And you have not sufficiently, although it's there, but you have not sufficiently directly glorified the personality of Godhead. So you just do that. Write one literature that just does that. And doesn't do all the other stuff. And that's the Bhagavatam. He told them to compile such a literature. He told them how to compile such a literature. What he needed to do before compiling such a literature. It's great. It's all very nice. It's all there. To be continued. Any comments or questions? Yeah.
I have three questions for Master. And the first one, those four sacrifices that Srila Vyasada is, playing in the four Vedas, I know three mostly in Karmakanda, Upasanakanda, and Jnanakanda. Is that right?
No. You're mixing things.
Okay.
Karmakanda has all four of them. Separate from Karmakanda is another section of the Vedas, much smaller, Upanishads in particular. They don't describe the four sacrifices. They're the philosophical portion that's the support or the basis of the other ones. And in those Upanishads, at least apparently to those who are not devotees but merely scholars, it looks to them like they're not speaking about getting worldly things, they're speaking about Brahman. Detachment from worldly things and focusing on Brahman. I think that's how they see it. And then there's another section in which the Srimad Bhagavatam and even smaller portion of the Vedas fall. And that's teaching directly the worship of the Personality of Godhead. So now these, back to your question, these four types of sacrifices fall within the four Vedas.
And that's Arhat Kama?
No, I don't know. It's some kind of technical, I don't know, answer. It's not Dharma Artha Kama Moksha. That's something else altogether. Particular types of, and I don't have the answer to that. I'm not a scholar in the four Vedas. I've heard it, but it's not like I can research it and let you know, but it's not Dharma of the Kama Moksha. Now, within each of the four Vedas, there are sections within them. There are four types of priests that are required to do each one of those. And something like those that know the mantras, those that know how the meter and the melody and the pronunciation of the mantras, they're expert in that area. There's some that are expert in the circumstances under which the sacrifices to be performed, all the details of direction and time and all those things. And then there's a fourth that's the referee, who kind of monitors the other three. Something like that.
Okay.
four types of priests necessary to do one yajna within the one of the four Vedas. And there's texts that they have to become expert in to know what those different functions are. And so there's Dvivedi and Trivedi and Chaturvedi. You've heard those terms. Right? The Kunja Viharis. What's it? Trivedi? Trivedi. So that means they're knowledgeable in three of the four Vedas. Either this way, you know, or this way. And that means, you know, the ancestors had to memorize it. And then not only memorize it, they had systems of memorization that were like, they had to memorize it backwards and forwards. Like, that's all they do. They've got it wired. And we'll see coming up the next verses. Vyas gave to different of his disciples the responsibility to maintain these, although they were written. Even things that are written can be perverted. So that was their charge. I know somebody that may know, like really quickly, so maybe by tomorrow morning I can find out. But formerly there were only the Veda of the name Yajur, and the four divisions of sacrifices were there, specifically mentioned. But to make them more easily performable, the Vedas, the Veda was divided into four divisions of sacrifice. So, the language is really important. It could mean that it's just simply, you know, Rig Sama Yajur and the Tarva Veda, and not necessarily four categories of sacrifice. Just, you know, there are distinctions within those four. And again, that's a subject matter I've not studied, so I can't say so much about. Anything else? Yes? Yeah, go ahead. Not the four Vedas come from, the four Vedas are Shruti.
Is that four divisions of people?
Four divisions of people? No. 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 It's not this Veda is for the Brahmanas and that Veda is for the Kshatriyas. No. No.
Why people don't accept Shruti?
Because of scholars.
Because they want to.
No, it's you know, scholars are big guys. You know, it's look, I'm a scholar. You're not a scholar because you're not a Brahmin and I'm a Brahmin, and I'm telling you because you over there, you can't study the Vedas because you're not a Brahmin, but I'm a Brahmin. I'll tell you what the Vedas are. And those other ones, the Sanskrit is more accessible, but it's not Vedic. It's a prideful put down. It's not based on what the Shrutis say, because people don't have access to the Shrutis. They only have access to the Brahmanas that study the Shrutis that say, they don't tell them the parts that the Shrutis say. The fifth Veda is as Vedic as the four Vedas. There's the fifth Veda. I mean, the language itself is the fifth Veda, not the four Vedas. And then there's this other trashy thing for worldly people. It's the fifth Veda. So the divisions are not Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. It's for all the orders. So I'm a Shudra, and I want to get my daughter married. So there's a sacrifice for marriage, according to the Vedas. And I go to a Brahmana that can teach me how to do that. That can teach me how to do that, but can conduct the ceremony for me.
Why
is he doing what?
Giving the opportunity of conflict here, like, you know, four Vedas and six Vedas. If he can foresee anything in the future, why he has to do that like this?
He doesn't have to.
Why did he?
Okay, take the microphone. Why is there a winter season? Why is it just spring all the time? Or maybe, you know, three seasons. Spring, and then fall. Spring, and then winter, and then fall, and then spring, and winter, and fall. Why is there a winter? Did Krishna make a mistake? We shouldn't really have winter. So, why is there Kali Yuga? So much suffering and anguish and misery, and it's really too much. Krishna must have made a mistake. He shouldn't have had a Kali Yuga. Vyasadeva made a mistake. He shouldn't have done what he did, because by doing that, people get misled. Shouldn't have done it. He should have just, you know, given one thing. Given the real thing. The answer is, there's modes of nature and people don't want. What about the people that don't want the one thing? And that's, you know, this material world is for people who don't want the one thing. They don't want love for Krishna. That's why they're here. They want to enjoy. And so the facility for that is provided. Vyasadeva is the instrument. Shaktivesh avatar. It's not his preference any more than it's Krishna's preference. The preference, the preferred position is Vaikuntha. But then there are those that I don't enjoy separately. So the facility for that is there. Compassionately. To gradually, ever so gradually purify. I don't want to get purification too much, too fast. A little bit. Okay. And then there's gradations of planets, and the whole cosmic manifestation is there. For people that are rebellious. And there's grades of rebellion. So there's grades of knowledge. It's not a mistake. The mistake is our mistake. And Krishna's reciprocating. Telling us all the while, please come to me. But we go, no. I want to enjoy. Like a child. So what's a parent going to do? A loving parent encourages the child to understand the higher position and, you know, minimizes the danger in the other than the higher position. Isn't it? So Vyasadeva is facilitating that. It's the eve of Kali Yuga. No, you go back to the question, why even Kali Yuga? Go back to another question, why even creation? It's unnecessary. You know, Krishna shouldn't have done the creation. he doesn't interfere with our free will. You know, we can misuse free will pretty badly. So he gives facility. What do you think? Okay. Don't give him the microphone again. 10 minutes. On the same topic. Look what you started.
I'm really very thankful to Krishna that I'm living in a part of the world where if I really want, I can focus on higher purpose of life and improve my spiritual aspiration and whatnot. And yet we are living in a world where so much violence is happening. And it's a grace of, that we use, there are different grades of but so much violence is going on in different parts of the world, and so because we are living at this time, I just throughout the entire period of creation, different degrees of violence do exist, but yet we are living here at this time, and we hear about so much violence, and we are practicing here in the peaceful corner of the world. How do we really process this? I mean, how? I mean, violence it's a cycle of violence, and violence creates more violence. We know that. And the living entities.
What's your question? Get to the question. The punchline.
The living entities who are caught in that cycle of violence. You cannot help but think about them. And sometimes you hear about, when Maharaj Yudhishthira's time, the whole world, it was one, and then people migrated to different parts of the world. And there are people who were followers of Vedic civilization at one time, living in different parts of the world where they are suffering so much. And this is, Krishna's arrangement, and yet, we are living at this time, and you feel like your heart breaks when you hear about those things. How can, what do we do? I mean we cannot stop that.
There are different types of violence. My heart breaks when I see, the land of the free and the home of the brave here in America, where the core, you could say, freedom of expression and so forth and so on, gets exploited, and it's another kind of violence. Let's say, the kids that are sitting there with the little doodads. And, what's in those little doodads? It's somebody hitting somebody, and somebody shooting somebody, and somebody smashing somebody, and... I don't do those things, so I don't know what all those things are. But it's like, why is the violence that's happening in schools, and and so forth and so on. It starts with application of technology to contaminate wholesale. That's another violence. There's different types. It's the age of Kali. It's not, this one's better than that one. That one's really bad, and this one's really bad. So how do we stop that? And as you say, this violence perpetuates yet another violence. And then anyway. It's a crazy world. And so the panacea, same question you're asking, Vyasadeva's asking, and his decision was, and our Acharya's similar decision is, to give the people of the world the alternative of consciousness. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so Prabhupada wanted mass proliferation of knowledge through the distribution of his transcendental literatures. And then once those literatures are distributed, to train and guide people how to understand them and to apply them in their life. We have the training and education, both distribution and training and education, and that's our answer. And, you know, to go into those parts of the world where the other kind of violence, there are devotees that are doing that, but it's, you know, it's very dangerous. Life-threatening dangerous. But raising families in this atmosphere, it's another dangerous. I mean, look around. And it's dangerous. It's another kind of dangerous. It's less assaulting. It's less conspicuous kind of dangerous. But it's another kind of dangerous. Very dangerous. So certainly I, you know, would prefer to see someone I cared for raising their family in this kind of dangerous and that kind of dangerous. But those that are raising families in this kind of danger should be well aware of the dangers. And, you know, with the facility given, take shelter, the proper shelters. But because it's not so dangerous, at least appears to be not so dangerous, it's la-di-da. And meanwhile, the core is being corrupted. So, the primary response to what I think is your question is we need to take shelter of the real message. Vyasadeva went to the trouble under the advice of Narada out of great compassion, and we should receive it. And our acharyas have given it to us, Prabhupada specifically has given to us this message, and we should receive it thoughtfully. And then that in turn can make the difference in our lives and in those who we interact with. That message of compassion. It's 10 minutes before 8 o'clock, and our pujari is probably getting restless. But you want to ask one question? Okay.
The Indian minister in the first chapter of Solomon, the Alphabet incarnation,
which one?
Madhantara avatar.
Okay.
Is that Vishnu Parva? I was also looking up just now because you had mentioned the seven categories of Shakti or something. I was looking up that relationship and version of them.
Okay.
Normally, we understand Shakti Arisha avatar as a living entity who empowered.
Yeah, so it's not always a living entity. It can be Vishnu Tattva as well as Jiva Tattva. Commonly, for the most part, Jiva Tattva empowered. But it can also be, there are Ananta and Shesha, Nag, are Vishnu Tattva.
And from Manantara,
well, there's not a whole lot describing Manvantara avatars. But to mention this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's also mentioned in the beginning of the 8th canto Srimad Bhagavatam, is an example of Manvantara avatars, Lord Vamana. He's a Leela avatar, but he's also the avatar during the reign of Vaivasvata Manu. So he falls in two categories. Now your question is specifically Jiva Tattva or Vishnu Tattva. And this is not a commonly, the following what I'm about to say is not from scripture, just, you know, common sense. So Vishnu Tattva predominantly. Whether there's examples, because there's not a whole lot spoken about Manvantara avatars anyway, so whether there are examples of living entities who are empowered to be Manvantara avatars, I don't know anything about it. I've not read anything authoritative in that regard. So therefore, having not read anything about it, most commonly Vishnu Tattva would be in the Manvantara avatar category. So they're forms of the Lord that appear during reigns of particular manus, creating thus a category of manvantara avatars. Number six out of, or one of the six. A nice, it's referenced in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lagu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami has, the whole book is about avatars, categories of avatars, and giving and saying things definitively about them. Text 38 of Sri Brahma Samhita, which is what I'm going to be working on next in the Brahma Samhita presentation, is Krishna is the source of all avatars. So maybe I'll spend some time on that the next few days and share with you what I come up with about manvantara avatars, but there's not a whole lot. Hare Krishna. See the Prabhupada? He does.